It is hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Pick out the stems and seeds at 2:45 with some NFL injury updates. At 2:30, why does December 1st matter? Rosa freaking Parks, amongst other things. In a mere minutes, it is part two of my chat with Bob Saget, ahead of his show at the Paramount Theater this Friday. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Hour number three. Before we get to Bob Saget, just a reminder, you got Under the Lights tonight. They're over on Brody. Brody and Slaughter for the edition tonight out at Bush's Chicken. So go have some. I still need to go out and have the Bush's Chicken. Rick Epstein tells me it's great. I've not had it yet. I need to do it. Get on out there tonight. Rick Epstein, Jeff Powers, Rodney Rodriguez live at Bush's Chicken. Lake Travis head coach Hank Carter. I think I got this one. Vandegrift wide receiver Reese Beecham and Liberty Hill head coach Kent Walker will all be, now I can't get his name right, Coach Kent Walker will all be out there. Trey and I are not pronouncing well today.
Oh,
Under the Lights tonight at 7 right here on the Horn. And also, if you're a women's basketball fan, get on out to the Irwin Center for the game against Jackson State. They will tip it at 7. It is over on 105.3 The Bat. All women's games can be heard on our sister station, 105.3 The Bat. All right, Trey, let's go part two of Bob Saget. Can you please crank up some vulgar for me?
Yes, I can. That is part two of my conversation with Bob Saget, who, of course, is a Grammy-nominated stand-up comedian, director, actor, and best-selling author. And he's performing in Austin this Friday night at the historic Paramount Theater. You can go to austintheater.org to snag some of the few tickets that are remaining. And now, part two of my chat with Bob Saget. Now, getting back to what you were doing in the 1990s, well, most people remember the Full House, the America's Funniest Home Videos. One of my favorite moments of yours from that decade was what I have to consider the best cameo from a comedy in the 1990s, and that, of course, is your scene in Half-Baked where you drop the infamous "I used to suck for Coke" line. How in the world did that come about? Is that a matter of you knowing Neil's dad, Kevin, who was a stand-up, obviously, in the 1980s?
Oh, I thought you meant, did I know that Neil's dad sucked for Coke, so that's why I said it. No, I did not. I didn't think he did. That was really simple. I was directing Dirty Work with Norm and Artie and a lot of great people. And the same producer, Bob Simons, was producing Half-Baked, which I originally wanted to direct. And they had a wonderful director. She's great. Tamara. I'm sorry. My brain goes blank on anything. It's not about me. But they said, would you like to play this role in the rehab scene? I was shooting. I had half a day I could get away. And I read the script and I said, sure, I'll say that. And then I just did. And I'd been friends with Dave. It was Dave and Neil. And then I knew so many people in the movie, Jim Brewer and Harlan Williams, and a lot of friends. And so I went there and did the scene. It was really simple. There was no effort involved. I found that most of the time, things I worked the hardest to get done don't happen, and things I put no effort into, I just show up. And that was one of those little things. And that was, I understood, one of the bigger laughs. I never saw it in a theater, but people said that it was so unexpected, and oh my gosh, can you believe Bob's talking this way? And it's like, everybody else that knew me went, no. You give him something to say that's horrible, because I think it's just words. I don't look at it as a sexual thing. So when I curse and I drop F-bombs, you know, usually it's not a verb. It's an exclamatory. But I guess sometimes I would get too gross or do jokes about subject matter that you just don't. These now, even 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I stopped doing stuff. I did it. I've done a couple songs in my career that would do well, really well with some audiences. And I was in Austin even for that Alley Coalition. I don't think it's a lie. No, I give them money and I support them and I like them. And I did a song that had been doing very well. It was a music parody. And I stopped doing it after that because it affected that audience. I had not had a concentrated audience that was 99% gay and transsexual and transgender and a lot of different people that I had not been collectively in front of before, and that affected me. I don't like to hurt anybody. So it's interesting. People ask me to do, oh, tell the aristocrats. I'm like, no. You know, I know a family that actually went through something like that. And no, I only told the joke twice, and it was in this documentary, which is about freedom of speech, but it's also a chance for people to just be, you know, filthy behind a trash dumpster was the idea. That's what George Carlin said. Don't tell this joke to anyone. So I'm trying to stay true to that.
So it's interesting that Half Baked and Dirty Work come out the same year, 1998, because I've read...
Right.
I've read from various sources that both films were really affected in terms of what they wanted to do, what they wanted to become, were affected by the studio essentially saying, no, we need you to yuck it up in more sophomoric ways that will avoid this R rating. For Half-Baked, and maybe you can tell me whether this is right or not, since you were maybe going to direct it at one point, Neil and Dave wanted that to be more of a dark comedy than the stoner comedy.
I would imagine that's true. I don't know that. And it was never, those things aren't decided ahead of time. Normally they go, let's make the movie. And then they go make the movie. And then the studio gives notes. And then you go, no, the script's done. And then you work on the script, which we did with this script of Dirty Work was by Norm and mm-hmm. Frank Sebastiano and Fred Wolf. And Half-Baked was Dave and Neil. I don't know the story behind them. I only know the story behind us. And nobody said we wanted to be more of... They just wanted it to be Norm's movie. Norm was popular. They knew it was going to be subversive. It had enough silliness in it. It was written that way. It was really written that way from page one. And we did rewrites. And a lot of them. You rewrite as you're working. You know, can this be funnier? Or wouldn't it be funny if we added that? And they cut about MGM. I went to the MPAA and asked Jack Valenti, who's no longer with us, but he was one of the biggest people at the MPAA, which gives you a rating, and said, please make us a PG. I don't know if PG-13 existed. It must have been. I said, please don't give us an R. And then I fought to keep it an R. And the producer and the studio just said, we really need it to be PG because R-rated comedies don't do well. And as life always has it, a month later, Something About Mary came out and Ben Stiller has semen in his hair because he in a bathroom. And we just had some, you know, Norm was anally in a prison, but I had to put different words in his mouth. He goes, that was disgusting, that he names something and he goes and the other thing was actually, if you look at his mouth, it's in a wide shot, and the anal not to mention the anal or something like that.
Wow.
But there were things like that, just little things like that that would have made I think a more subversive audience laugh, an audience that enjoys that SNL that sometimes we actually have right now, which you're watching it and you go, wow, that was great. You know, they did that and that was politically savvy and it went into a dark area that I'm not used to seeing on television. And it felt like old school SNL a little bit. It's always nice when it goes through those waves of what great lampooning, whether you're from the National Lampoon, and a lot of writers were that worked on SNL, or from the Harvard Lampoon, you know, or from whatever the Lampoon's called in Oxford. I can't remember because I'm dumb. But that's, Norm was, all comedians, as you know, you've talked to some, are outsiders. That's just how they function. They just, they live outside the box and they look at everything, whether they're clean cut, Jim Gaffigan talking about his family, Sebastian. These are gentlemen that go on stage and talk about their family or their wife, who they love very much, like they're all aliens. Like, mm-hmm. Every time Sebastian talks about his wife's Amazon boxes, you know, he's speaking for anybody that has that happen in their life. They're with their partner who orders from Amazon three times a day, which is, I think, the pandemic. I think it's actually a symptom of COVID, is you must shop Amazon three times a day. But then you look at other comedians that are causing quite a ruckus, you know, that friends of mine that are getting called out and people want to cancel them for their right to speak what comedy they, or I don't know, sometimes they just stand on a soapbox or just talking straight to people, which there's much more of that now. There's much more, well, spoken word's a good example, and you see Dave Chappelle just got nominated for a Grammy for spoken word. And in that, I deservedly so. So it's very hard to cancel people, when it's a witch hunt. Even if what people claim someone did, if you really, I don't know, a subjective jury of comedy critics calls someone guilty of what? What are they guilty of? They hurt some people, perhaps, or they spoke their mind, and you don't understand their whole point because you never got to the end of the thing, which was the point, or I'm wrong. But I do think we've got a witch hunt going on, and I am not wanting to be part of it whatsoever, calling anybody out or just always saying negative things. Everybody says negative stuff. No, people don't. I'll do a dad joke, a pun, a stupid joke. And oh, I forgot that. Oh, wait, it's a joke. And I'll even put it on Twitter and people will just attack it. And I usually want to have an auto response of, have you ever tried to think of anything funny or make anybody laugh? You know, what the f- is wrong with you? I write, when I started on Twitter, I would do it because I figured a kid's going to the parking lot, I'll make him laugh on the way as he gets in the car. You know, little did I know, he looked at it while he was driving and he had a truck, but I didn't know that. But that the idea was to amuse people. And now literally everybody just wants to criticize or go ba-dum-bump or do, you know, emoticons and crickets. And I don't really give a shit because they're not trying to do comedy. They're just sitting back criticizing everybody. They have no purpose unless they are helping people. Unless they're a social worker in their spare time, I think they're just nasty people that are unrequited in their own life. They joined the herd mentality.
Yeah, so they're one of three things, Bob. They are either miserable people and they're trying to drag others into their misery. They have no senses of humor. Or they also don't understand the greater meaning of something like stand-up comedy, where you are saying outrageous things to something you said at the very start of this conversation to maybe make a larger point versus seeing things so small picture in that moment for something that you may find a little bit offensive.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. You said it much more truncated and intelligently than I did. Yeah, they are not considering the source and considering that here's a good person saying something and they are well aware of this is a dumbass thing they're saying, or they're making this comment because they are making fun of the very thing that they are making the offensive joke about, in the case of the joke that could be taken offensive. Otherwise you write a homogenous joke and people just go, okay, or you get a brilliant joke and you know it is, you went, where'd that come from? I that went through my brain and out my thumbs or out my mouth in front of these nice people. I've really accepted that most people are nice. So I'll perform in front of an audience anywhere. I've been throughout Texas. I opened, a lot of places were closed. Theaters were closed. Theaters went broke. I was able to go, I opened the Houston Improv. It was after a year and a half. Texas doesn't close down. It did. And Texas is angry over it. And now it's coming back. And we all know Texas has its own personality. Oh, yeah. And Texas has always been a friend of mine, everywhere, every city, except Beaumont. When I played in the El Paso airport, I was like 22. And there was a knife sharpening shop at the El Paso airport. That's how old I am. A knife sharpening shop. So on your flight, if you want to sharpen your knife to get it ready for the flight, you can do that at the knife sharpening shop. It's probably a yogurt land now or something. But in Beaumont, I was playing behind chicken wire. I was 22 also, 23. Wow. And they threw bottles at the chicken wire. And it was like the Blues Brothers where they get attacked. The Blues Brothers, if there's any kids out there, that was John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd. They're in a movie. And it was a big, big thing. And it was called the Blues Brothers, and they performed a lot, and they were quite awesome. They were so entertaining. And the movie was very, in today, it's thought of a lot differently than when it came out. It's regarded much more highly. But yeah, having bottles thrown at you behind a cage while you're trying to play guitar parodies, which is why I deserved the glass being thrown at me. But the owner of the club, I said, can I get off stage? He went, no, you're killing. You're doing great. So that was how affection was shown.
I mean,
but I've been doing stand-up. As soon as it opened the floodgates, I went back out again.
I mean, that's straight out of Roadhouse. I didn't realize that happened in the world of stand-up way back when either.
I always played music clubs because my stand-up was kind of – I'd play music venues, a lot of hard rocks once they started. It is out of Roadhouse. I played sci-fi film audiences. I feel like I even played the Star Wars bar. You know, I was like a lounge act. But I would do an hour of stand-up or 45 and then half-hour guitar. And wow, it was a lot of music parodies, but a lot of original songs, and only a couple are decent. I wrote like 100 songs. I would register them with the Library of Congress. I'd fill out the forms to copyright them, all this crap you do, which means nothing. Now all you have to do is record them and be on a show, and then that's it. You're an ASCAP, and you get royalties for singing them on something. But I just, this is part of what I do. It's one of the things I love doing. I have to tell you, I'm doing two shows. Thursday, I'm doing a Wichita, the Orpheum Theater, and they're just opening up again. They're doing a lot of comedy, and Paramount has always done comedy in Austin, always, and it's just a great theater. And a lot of my friends, a lot of people I talk to all the time, that we know where we all are. We look at each other's list of tour dates, and I'm doing more clubs by choice because I'm really riffing and I'm trying to figure out, you know, how great can I make this new special be? Because I'm always really hard on myself and not feeling like I've done anywhere near the level of comedy that I feel like I'm at now. And I hope in a year or two, I feel even stronger about that in myself. But I'm enjoying stand-up like I never have. This last weekend was the weekend, only weekend I didn't go out this year because it was Thanksgiving and I was with my wife and my kids. And they're different people, by the way.
That's good.
So I think so. I think it's better. Especially if you have to fill out forms, you know, for anything like when we donate blood, I don't want them to go, is that your daughter and my wife? You know, that's takes you back to things you can't say. And like National Lampoon's Vacation, the original Randy Quaid's daughter says, my daddy says I'm the best kisser. And that would still be used today on the proper show, you know, on Reno 911, you would see that, you know. You know, incest jokes, there's a lot of things you don't joke about because it exists, but people that do it are so damn sick that that's what you're joking about, how incredibly sick they are. That's why the Aristocrats was popular.
You're right about that. You just have to attribute the incest joke to either Arkansas or West Virginia. You're in the clear at that point.
I think you really got to broaden your sights on that. I think it can cover... You can cover most of North America. I think you can cover the whole world. I mean, I'd like to see you know how the coronavirus chart tells you what states it's popular in?
Yeah.
You know, it's popular. I think you could do that with an incest chart. You could do the entire North America and show where it's really prevalent. And it depends on who made the chart. I mean, if the chart maker is guilty, you might get a whole skewed chart, and you got to do it all over again because that would be complete fraud, and you would have to demand a council come in and recount. I think it's the same people that – no, I'm not going to do a political joke, but you know where I was going.
come to find out, incest is seasonal regionally, so it's worse in Minnesota in the springtime, worse in Arkansas in the summer.
It is. It's also in the winter because you're indoors with your family. So, you know, I would think the worst time for incest is the holidays, I would say Thanksgiving and Christmas. Are you coming home for Christmas? No, I'm not. In fact, I'm never coming home. Well, good for you. Now file charges. That's what I would say to people. And again, this went down a road that probably will make some people go, I'm not going to go see that crap. But I won't be talking about incest on Friday night unless I have requests. You know, I really want to entertain.
I'll try to avoid yelling out from the crowd, tell us an incest joke, but I can't make any promises, Bob.
If you look, do what you got to do. You bring in your mom?
No, I'm Oh, man. Can I do a little bit of internet fact check with you really quickly? Because anywhere from 5 to 95% of what we read online is complete BS. And there's obviously a lot written about you. Do you own the pipe that Rodney Dangerfield used to smoke weed with that was gifted to you by his widow, Joan?
Yeah, there's a couple of us. I know he gave one to Jim Carrey. He had a bunch of pipes, but I have a pipe and I have a pot box that he enjoyed keeping his greenery in. Yeah. And the reason that became known was because I was talking to Bill Burr and Bert Kreischer on their podcast together, and I showed it to them. I went in the other room and I got it. It's actually behind this wall.
Wow.
Which is good in case a burglar is watching. I don't know. But I don't know what you'd get for it. Rodney's pipe. I don't know if you'd get money for it. You might just want to smoke it. I don't think you'd want to put that on eBay.
Plenty of sentimental value there. All right. The next thing that I ask him about on the internet fact check, Chad, is Dave Coulier and whether or not he's the mystery man in Alanis Morissette's You Ought to Know.
That's tomorrow.
Starts part three off tomorrow at 2 o'clock. You don't want to miss it. You can also go back and listen to part two again, uncensored, in the entire conversation if you'd like. And you can watch it as well. We have a video element with Books on Pod now at booksonpod.com. You don't want to miss part three. We get into Dave Coulier and Alanis Morissette. We also talk a lot about Norm as well, tell some very funny and also some very heartfelt things about Norm. And I also get really awkward in the middle of his Norm answer and trying to be funny with Bob Saget. So you can decide for yourself as to whether or not that worked.
One of our listeners agrees with me that the "Are you bringing your mom" line,
that was awesome.
It was a high mark in the interview.
He caught me there, too, because I started to answer it seriously. Then I realized what he had done.
That was fantastic. Good stuff there with Bob Saget. Remember, Friday night at the Paramount, austintheater.org to get your tickets and be there just like Trey and yell out whatever you want on stage and see if they throw you out. Or just be quiet and listen to a comedy show. Either way. Up next, we'll tell you why December 1st matters to us. Got a couple of birthdays to hit in the world of comedy, including one of the GOATs, probably a Mount Rushmore for most people with a birthday today. We'll tell you who it is on the horn.
Shirts and skins.
Your mama's got nothing on me. Your daddy's got nothing on me. And the world that sleeps in its lunacy has got nothing on me. No stars got nothing on me. Your son's got
That took a turn. What do you got, Trey?
This is Portugal the Man, Evil Friends.
Portugal the Man. Good catchy stuff. Nice songwriting there. Evil Friends, is that what you said?
Yep.
Okay. Trey's going with an indie list today. It does include that Portugal the Man tune. Check it out if you like. We got a lot of football on the board today, including people on the move, including Brian Kelly, who had his press conference today at LSU. I got a couple quotes I'll read at some point, and if you're around any Notre Dame people, you're going to need to make sure they don't have a sharp object near them when I read one thing he said today. Oh, my goodness. There's a reason that the most successful coach, Trey, in Notre Dame history can't just go to LSU and have a press conference. Like, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And he said some of that stuff today. He couldn't help himself. I get it. You're down there and you're going to say things about LSU, but wow, you were just at Notre Dame like a minute ago. So we'll get to that. But right now, let's tell you why December 1st matters. Here we go.
Why Today Matters, brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialist. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Daniel Slaughter at Sinus and Snoring Specialist. 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com.
All righty. Since we were just talking a little comedy there, Trey was, with Bob Saget. Part two of the interview was today. We'll get part three tomorrow. And remember, you can hear the full unedited version at booksonpod.com. Let's go with two comics. Born 30 years apart, Sarah Silverman is 51, one of my favorites in that generation, and Trey, a Mount Rushmore for many, many folks in the comedy world, the great Richard Pryor would have been 81 years old today, died in 05.
Richard Pryor, on most comedians and most fans of stand-up, they're Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
One of the four greatest.
For me, it's him and Carlin, and then we can discuss the other two spots.
Sarah Silverman certainly had her moment. Unfortunately, she's become not very funny in the last few years.
Oh, yeah,
and I think that's maybe because she's trying to steer away from comedy and have more serious conversations about things.
Yep.
But there was a moment where she was not just the funniest female comedian around. She was one of the funniest people around.
Oh, I love her stand-up, man. In her prime, her stand-up was absolutely incredible. If she's indeed maybe not in that prime anymore. But, yeah, whenever Sarah really hit it big, man, I thought she was great.
Today is also National Rosa Parks Day. I guess it would have been her birthday many years ago. And yeah.
This is the day it happened.
This is the day that it
happened. December 1st, 1955 is the day she got on the bus.
So you explained a detail about that story that I'd never heard before that I think it's worth other people hearing right now. Some probably know this. Others may be misinformed like I was before today.
It's one of those that never stuck in my mind either. So apparently, I'm reading today, when Rosa Parks gets on this bus, I think a lot of people may think she sat in the white section of the bus.
That's what I always assumed, that she sat at the front of the bus.
That she did it as a protest, right? Like, I'm going to sit here and this is what's really right ultimately and all that. No. What I read today is that she sat in those days, the colored section of the bus. And then the way the law was written in Birmingham was that once the bus filled up, then if white people got on the bus, black people were expected by the law to get up and give their seat up to a white person. So that's what happened. Busy day. I believe I'm reading it was a Thursday or a Friday after work. It's in the evening and she's had a hard day of work and everybody has and they're all going home. So you're packing a bus full of people, and at some point she was asked to give her seat up to a white person in the colored section, and that's what she refused. So that's the detail. Maybe, like you said, a lot of people probably know that. That's one that I've always, like, for some reason never stuck with me through the years. So it was just that extra insult of, not only do you make me sit in this section, but now you're telling me that whatever, we don't know who it was at that moment, but this white person that just got on this bus and is walking back to this section that you've made us sit in, now you're telling me they're better than me and I got to stand to give them. Yeah, I think we could all understand how some frustration might have been a part of that.
Look, this modern version of society does plenty of things that deserve criticism, racial and otherwise. But thank God we have evolved from that point, which is just embarrassing beyond belief, that if you lived in that time and you operated in that manner, because I understand it was more accepted then, there were still plenty of people who thought it was messed up back then. If you were one of those people who demanded that an African-American person get up on a bus, a little woman, by the way, let's say you're a white guy and you expect a little woman to get up so you can have a seat on the bus, you are a pathetic human being.
It is. Yeah.
Back in the 1950s, 60s.
1955, on this day, changed a lot of things, and it certainly did take a lot of guts to do what Rosa Parks did. So it is National Rosa Parks Day because of this day.
She is a hero.
On the calendar. Yes, she is. Also, again, I mentioned it earlier, but let's give R.C. Slocum a little love. He did beat Hodgkin's lymphoma. To anybody out there that got to ring that bell recently, God love you, man. Going through cancer treatments and those doctors and medical science and all the hopes and thoughts and prayers doing all the great work. You walk out of there, ring that bell like RC did, good for you. I've thankfully not been through that experience myself or had anyone super close to me go through it around me and my family, but we all know so many people that have been connected to it. So just great to hear RC's story, and I know there are a lot of you out there that have beaten it, so congrats.
You think if Lincoln Riley announced that he had cancer tomorrow, Sooners fans would hope that he didn't have the same outcome as RC?
I hope that would not be the reaction.
I would hope so, too. All right, last little thing that we need to note for today before hitting the commercial break, Chad.
All right.
It's Eat a Red Apple Day, of which you've seen me consume, I don't know, probably about 1,000 since we started doing this show.
No, not red ones, I haven't. You're a green apple snob. I don't think I've ever seen you eat a red apple.
You are not paying close attention, sir.
Don't you walk in here every day? Now,
colorblind? It's a Fuji apple, which is a red apple.
That's a red apple.
Yes.
But you also eat it in 6.5 seconds. I don't get much of a chance to figure out what color it is.
That's fair. So
one is like Chris Kattan as what was his name? Mango or Tango or Bubbles or
that monkey-like creature.
Jenga's exactly. Mr. something.
Well, let me just promise that one of the 10 to 15 apples that I eat today, I will eat in honor of Eat a Red Apple Day.
There you go. What's your favorite? That would be your favorite red apple, Fuji apple.
I only eat Fujis. I actually don't like Granny Smith apples. I guess there's a yellow delicious that I could consume, but it's almost exclusively Fujis.
I don't love the, what are the ones my dad would eat when I was little? Are they called Red Delicious?
Red Delicious, yeah. I used to like Red Delicious as a kid.
They're too chalky for me.
Yeah, they are. See, here's the thing, though. They're subdued on the tartness, which is my problem with a lot of apples. They're just too acidic.
And then the Granny Smith has a little bit too much of a bite sometimes for me.
So that's too acidic. It's oftentimes while you'll see the Granny Smith used in baking, but not used in terms of eating raw.
I use Granny Smith to mix in if I'm doing a smoothie type of thing, because then I can balance it out with something else.
Sure.
Balance it with other fruits or whatever I'm using for the smoothie.
Yeah, you're going to want some other strong-tasting fruits if you're going to use the Granny Smith in the smoothie.
Yes, indeed. All right, hope your December 1st is going well. Happy birthday, and rest in peace to the memory of Richard Pryor today. Go get yourself some Richard Pryor. I'm sure there'll be nothing offensive in there. Stems and seeds coming right up before we're done, including the guys moving around. We got coaches moving. We got big-time players moving. Plus, the Rangers can't stop spending money. We got to talk about that at some point. Trey and I are both Rangers fans. We got to talk about all this money they've been spending on the horn.
Shirts and skins.
Trey today. What do we finish it with, Trey?
And play an indie list and not include some Radiohead, Chad.
Oh, there you go.
This is Jigsaw Falling Into Place.
Radiohead definitely qualifies. Good indie stuff from Trey today. By the way, someone texted us, Rod Baber's co-host is a cancer survivor, Chad. His name is Kevin Dunn. That is true. The point I didn't make clearly maybe was I've never been around someone while they were going through it. Kevin went through that as a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. I didn't know Kevin then. That's what I meant by that. I don't have somebody that has been around me going through all of that. My parents are both technically cancer survivors, but they didn't go through hardcore cancer treatments like RC just went through. That's what I meant by that. So, yes, I do know that Kevin Dunn beat cancer.
Yeah, the person that comes to mind to me first is my grandmother, and we were there till the end with her. So, yeah, everybody has been impacted by cancer, so we can all get behind a feel-good story like R.C. Slocum, someone who's on the older side, who has gotten the clean bill of health now, is able to ring that bell, as you said last segment.
Yeah, the only thing I'm disappointed about is they should have recorded it twice because the bell ring wasn't really good the first time. Why? Don't use the first cut. Don't use the rough draft. He didn't know how to ring the bell properly. First time, it was awkward. The first ring, you could barely hear it. Do it again.
Oh, are you being serious?
Yes. Cut two. Go to cut two. Don't use cut one. What are you doing?
How the heck does he not know how to ring a bell?
It's not on him. I'm just saying, don't make my coach look bad. I'm saying video that. He walks out, he does the thumbs up, and then he does the ring. But that first ring, he didn't know how to. They should have let him practice. And he shouldn't have let that video get out.
Okay.
Come on, Aggies.
Fair.
What are you doing?
Or maybe he just doesn't care about the video.
He probably doesn't care. Yeah. All right. Let's go stems and seeds. I'll read you this Brian Kelly stuff.
No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. All right. This first part probably won't upset your Notre Dame friends any more than they already are. Brian Kelly said, among other things, quote, "There was no plan in place as I entered the 21 season, that I was looking for another opportunity. I had a great football team that we were developing, but you know, when you get an opportunity to talk to Scott Woodward and he presents a clear vision," all right, this is where they may start to get mad, "the plan here and the opportunity, it was an exciting vision for me to look at. As I got a chance to speak to more people about this opportunity, I just felt it was something I had to take on." Now, later on, Trey, he said this. I want you to imagine you're a Notre Dame fan as I read it. Quote, "I came down here because I wanted to be with the best. Mm. The resources here are outstanding. It starts with the alignment, excellence, the standard of expectations. Listen, you're looked at in terms of championships here. I want that. I want to be under the bright lights. I want to be on the Broadway stage. That's what my passion is. So, yeah, that's part of the draw. There's no doubt about that." End quote.
Is he being a college football coach or a member of the Rockettes, Chad?
Come on, man.
Yeah, that's a little bit insulting to Notre Dame fans.
I just can't believe it. It's still, I can't get it. I can't grasp that this has actually happened. It did not look right today, him rocking that purple tie. LSU fans, for your sake, I hope it works out for you. Notre Dame fans, I hope you find a guy that makes sense and is a fit for you. All right, Thursday show tomorrow. Bob Saget, part 3 at 2, and we will get you our normal Thursday stuff. J.D. Lewis with your fantasy stuff at 12:25. See ya!